Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to the E2G Sports Network, home of the unsung sports grid. Visit us at E2GSports.com and follow us across the socials for up-to-the-minute sports news. This podcast is the property of E2G Sports, LLC. Now, it's time for the show.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Going Old School Show. Chips, Crow, and Joe here, live on blogtalkradio.com. It is March 23rd, 2022. Lots to talk about, lots of football stuff, lots of baseball stuff here in New England, but it is March Madness, and it continues tomorrow night with the Sweet 16 getting underway. What better way to talk about college basketball and his bracketology than the senior writer for CBSSports.com, Jerry Palm, who covers the sport. Jerry, John and Joe here in Providence. How are you today?
I don't know. Hold on.
Hello.
Hey, Jerry. Sorry, we had you on hold there. Sorry for a minute. John and Joe here in Providence. How are you today, Jerry?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm good, sir. Thank you for your time today. Jerry, I want to start off with you on C-Turner. Before we get into the brackets, I want to talk to you about reputation and what that means in the NCAA tournament. We've seen Michigan State with Tom Izzo, a great tournament coach over the years, get in. You can argue reputation, but you spoke about it about 10 days ago on CBSSports.com. And Duke, a number two seed, seems a little bit gratuitous to me. I know it's Mike Krzyzewski's last year and all, but your thoughts in revisionist history having them as a number two seed overall?
Well, go back to Michigan State for a moment. They earned their spot. I mean, they didn't get in based on reputation. There was nothing there based on reputation. And I don't know that Duke got their seed based on that either. It's just, I think that the committee devalued the quality of a team's losses this year. That's really the only way Duke could be a two, is if you're just going to ignore the fact that they lost to some mediocre to bad teams compared to other teams that were in the top three lines of the bracket. Four losses outside of quadrant one, as did Wisconsin. The other 10 teams on the top three lines of the bracket had a total of four losses outside of quadrant one. And that should mean more to me. I mean, that should be meaningful, more meaningful than the committee gave it discredit for, I guess. And so Duke ends up a two. But really, I think in the face of the evidence that they belonged in that spot.
Jerry, obviously the big story here in Southern New England, the Providence College Friars, and they kind of had that tag as being a lucky team all year. Nationally, we obviously see them a little bit more closely here in Southern New England, but assess them now moving on to the Sweet 16 and their chances against number one Kansas.
Well, I don't like their chances against Kansas because Kansas is a fantastic team, but it has nothing really to do with Providence. I just think that, you know, Kansas is very talented. They're well coached. They don't make a lot of mistakes. They're really tough to beat for anybody. But I thought Providence did really well with the draw they were given. I thought their first-round opponent was probably underseeded, South Dakota State, but they did well with them. It was South Dakota State, right? I've got that right.
Yep.
And they, you know, did well in their second-round game. So, you know, Providence is where – you know, I think some people didn't think they could get here, and I thought they were under-respected over the course of the entire season nationally. I thought they got a difficult draw, but they're in the Sweet 16, and now they've got a difficult game against Kansas, and we'll see what happens. I'll be in Chicago, so I'm looking forward to seeing that one in person. Kansas has got, I think, a nice path now to the Final Four. And really, Providence is the only thing to be standing in their way.
Mm-hmm. Gary, the Big Ten had nine teams in the tourney and only two left, Purdue and Michigan. What's your opinion on if the Big Ten conference is kind of overrated by the committee and kind of given too many passes at every year?
Well, I don't think it's every year. Each year's on their own. The Big Ten had nine teams in this year. They weren't going to put nine in the Sweet 16 or even six. In fact, if they've gone by seed, they'd have three ended up with two, so that's one short. That's not terrible. It's below par, but it's not terrible. If you're saying that the Big Ten got too many teams, then you're suggesting probably that Indiana and Rutgers should not have made it and have been replaced with teams that were equally unlikely to advance. And I guess that doesn't really matter. The committee is supposed to pick the best teams, even the ones at the bottom of the bracket, and they thought Indiana and Rutgers belonged in the field. So there they are. They don't count teams by conference, so they're not thinking about that when they're putting teams in the bracket. They only care about it when they're putting them – I mean, when they're choosing them for the field, they don't care. When they're putting them in the bracket, they do care because they have to keep teams from the same conference separated at points. But otherwise, they're not sitting there counting like fans do. So the Big Ten's had better years. That's better than last year. Last year was a mitigated disaster. This year, the SEC and the Mountain West were unmitigated disasters, and the Big Ten just has underperformed a little bit.
Jerry Palm, CBSSports.com, college basketball senior writer, joined us here on the Old School Show and Blog Talk Radio. Jerry, of the three remaining number one seeds left, who, in your opinion, is the most vulnerable going into this weekend?
Arizona, probably. I don't know. Houston's a really good matchup athletically for Arizona. And then you probably get, Villanova that's a team that knows how to win in this tournament, that's an old team that doesn't make a lot of mistakes and would play a style that frustrates Arizona. Gonzaga didn't really get any favors with the draw. That's the overall number one seed, but kind of a lousy draw. They'll get Arkansas, who's very athletic, and then, Duke or Texas Tech, either of which have problems. That would be problems for matchups for Gonzaga, although I still like Gonzaga to get out of that region. Kansas, of the three number ones, got the easiest path for me. The other two are going to have challenges.
Okay.
Jerry, want to stick with that number one seed, Gonzaga? How much does it help a team along the way? We always seem to look back and say they had that one game early on in the tournament. Gonzaga coming out of the half, down 10 to a good Memphis team. How much does that now help them moving forward?
Well, it helps because you won, so you get to move forward. You're right. Everybody seems to have games like that. There's nobody cakewalks through six games in the NCAA tournament, no matter how good they are. And so Gonzaga had a tough test. They've survived it. It makes them better because they know they can do that. And Memphis was a team. Memphis, like Michigan and North Carolina, were all teams that are very talented, so talented that they were highly regarded in the preseason polls, never played to that level most of the season. But now all of them made it into the NCAA tournament and are starting to play. Well, Memphis is done now, but played to the level of their talent. Instead of the level of their seed. And so we still have North Carolina, we still have Michigan, and we almost had Memphis still in this Sweet 16, teams that were much more talented than the number to the left of their name.
Jerry, what Sweet 16 matchup intrigues you the most this weekend coming up? What game do you look forward to seeing the most?
Well, I think North Carolina and UCLA is pretty interesting because, like I just said, North Carolina spent the first 3 months of the season not playing to the level of their talent, and now they seem to have figured things out and are playing really well at the right time to play well. UCLA may be without Johnny Juzang or with some of a Johnny Juzang, and that's a problem for UCLA for sure. I think that game could be pretty interesting, and their styles are a little bit different. And then the 10-11 game in the Midwest, where you've got Iowa State, who a lot of people thought shouldn't be in the mm-hmm. tournament at all, still undefeated, by the way, in non-conference play this year against the Miami team. The styles of these two teams are completely different, and it'll be interesting to see who's able to dictate style and advance to play the winner of Kansas and Providence.
Jerry Palm joins us here on the Blog Talk Radio Show, Going Old School podcast with Chip Skill and John. Jerry, 15 seed St. Peter, Cinderella lives and dances to the Sweet 16. Two things. They go against your alma mater, a big, big Purdue team. So I would think the end comes, that the run comes to an end for St. Peter's. But going back to the upset over Kentucky, a blue blood team, on the Richter scale, the magnitude of that upset, we've seen big upsets before, but where does that rank in as far as your thoughts in the history of the tournament?
Well, you know, it's funny. I was at that game. I was covering the Indianapolis games. And that was remarkable. I mean, they played as hard as you possibly could. They knew they couldn't do anything with Oscar Tshiebwe, so they didn't seem to worry about it too much, and they fouled him a lot. But, you know, but they worked on Kentucky's guards and really gave their guards fits. I would say, I mean, obviously the UMBC upset of Virginia is number one as the only 16 to win a game. But when you look at some of the 15s to beat twos, boy, I saw Middle Tennessee beat Michigan State in 2016. I saw Richmond beat Syracuse, which was one of the early ones. Yep. It's on par with any of those 15-2 matchups because a lot of people thought this Kentucky team could win the national championship. I mean, they were a two seed, but a lot of people thought this was the best team in the tournament. And I thought that was also true of the Middle Tennessee-Michigan State game, where a lot of people thought that Michigan State team led by Denzel Valentine could win the national championship as well. So I'd put it right there with that one that I've personally witnessed, but also some of the others that I've seen before, right there behind that UMBC win.
Jerry, sticking with that upset theme, that thought, who's a team outside of St. Peter's, obviously being a 15th seed, but who's a team that you're looking at Thursday, Friday that will be surprised will still be playing this weekend?
Oh, gosh, I think we've reached the part of the tournament where we shouldn't be surprised. Other than St. Peter's beating Purdue, I don't think we should be at a point in the tournament where anything is surprising. There's probably, I mean, that's a 12.5-point line. That might be the only double-digit line of these eight games. The Purdue St. Peter's game is, but we're past the point where nothing should surprise us. All of these matchups are going to be, I mean, I think, you know, Kansas is going to be favored maybe a little bit, and you know, Gonzaga might be favored a little bit, but I just think that, you know, St. Peter's is the only team left that can surprise.
So, Jerry, you don't think it so really wouldn't be a surprise you if PC uses the motivation of being not respected enough nationally to beat Kansas? You know, that wouldn't shock you that much?
They won the Big East. You know, that's a good team. They're a four seed, but, you know, they won one of the best conferences in college basketball. I mean, yes, I guess that's, you know, they're going to be the underdogs. So in that sense, it would be, I guess, surprising, but I don't know. I mean, like I said, we've reached this point of the tournament where everybody's feeling good about themselves. They're playing well. That's why they're here. You know, other than just the complete athletic and size mismatch of Purdue with St. Peter's, there really isn't anything left to surprise.
Jerry Palm joins us here on the Going Old School. So, Jerry, just a couple more questions, and we thank you for your time. Obviously, backcourts are big in basketball, and Kansas has had a run of backcourts, and that breeds success in the tournament. Do they have the best backcourt with Christian Braun, Martin, and Agbaji, and to a lesser extent, Juwan Harris, Jr.? They go four deep, it seems, in the backcourt. Do they have the best backcourt tandem in all of in the rest of the tournament?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's not a tandem. Like you said, they go four deep.
Right.
So, yeah. I would say if I'm going to pick one, but I think Gonzaga's backcourt is underrated because Drew Timmy and Chet Holmgren get so much of the attention. They have an excellent backcourt as well. Arizona's backcourt is pretty good. You know, really, of the higher-seeded teams left, the only one you'd actually be concerned about is Purdue's because they rely so much on their posts. But Jaden Ivey's back there. So, you know, he's – you know, they've struggled defensively at times and with taking care of the ball. But everybody's backcourts are, you know, by the higher seeded teams anyway, have got really good backcourts. So, if I have to pick one, I'd go Kansas just because of the depth.
Mm-hmm.
Jerry, my final question for you. Thanks for the time. I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about the new hire at Rhode Island, Archie Miller. What'd you make of the hiring?
Don't schedule Purdue and you'll be fine. He couldn't beat Purdue in 4 years at Indiana.
Love it.
Yeah, I mean Archie didn't fit at Indiana, but he's been good everywhere else. So there's no reason to think that he couldn't be successful and get Rhode Island back to being competitive in their league. It's just Indiana, he was a fish out of water there. It just never seemed to work.
Jerry, final question from me, and we thank you for the time as well. Okay, what's your final four, and who do you see cutting down the nets come April 4th in New Orleans?
Well, I still have three of my final four left, so I'm sticking with them, and that's Gonzaga, Villanova, and Kansas. And then I'm picking Purdue with some trepidation out of the East. They're the highest seed left, and 42 years is long enough of a drought for Purdue. So now that they've gotten rid of Chris Beard, maybe they can do it.
Jerry, always a pleasure, man. Thank you for your time, taking the time out to join us today, and lots of success in the future. Thank you. Always enjoy your work.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Jerry.
That's Jerry Palm, CBSSports.com. And, Chase, you remember back in the day, he used college RPI? He was one of those guys who kind of, you know, that whole analytical stuff was started by him. Everyone talks about Lunardi at ESPN, who's really good. But Jerry Palm was kind of a pioneer back in the day.
Oh, no question. And you know, everyone looks at the Ken Palm ratings today and all that stuff, but he was well above the curve way back in the day. And we used to, come mid-February to the beginning of March, when March Madness was starting, we'd be taking that thing every couple of hours. He's always been great. And I just love his wit and his honesty when it comes to college basketball and college football. So he does a great job on CBS Sports.
And he's got like a dry sense of humor, too. He's very blessed, I talked about four deep, and then I called him a tandem. For camp. He goes, they wouldn't be a tandem if they were four deep. I love that stuff. Thank you. I talk about being in the classroom, but, he's great. Jerry Powell has been good to us. And he said, I'll tell you, he's the envy of me. Guys, he's going to be at that PC game in Chicago against a tough. This is a watershed moment for Mr. Cooley and the PC team. And we talked about power rankings before we got on the air. And PC's kind of having that us against the world mentality because they're double digits, Joe. I think you pointed out to me they were 11th in one of the polls.
I like his the Big East champions one point in a while, I get it. It's I get it, but it's like they did get blown out in the Big East tournament, so it's like, it's us against the world mentality of PC, I love his dry sense of humor. This guy, he was good. First time talking to him, I can get along with anybody with a dry sense of humor. It's right up my alley.
Yeah, no kidding. And JC,
he's right about Providence, too. He's dead on about Providence, Kansas, too. I mean, Kansas should be favored. They're a quality team. And, Providence might give them their toughest game the rest of the way.
Exactly. True. And I think this is where you talk about the shooting, but PC's got they looked really good defensively in these two games as the games progressed. And they're going to have to play a really good defensive effort and maybe take a couple of fouls. It's just establish that defensive front inside the paint. Because they can get out-rebound at times when they don't seem to box out as well, JC. Outside shooting notwithstanding, I said it last week, but Nate Watson's going to come up big in the paint. I mean, he's going to be the key to this, and getting him the ball and facilitating from the outside. I mean, PC had a real good shooting game in their last matchup against, and I'm drawing a blank.
Against Richmond.
Whatever. Yeah. Yes, against Richmond. They don't need to do that. They got to get inside the paint here. Your thoughts on that before we go to break and hopefully get Jarvis on the other side?
Yeah, Nate Horkler. Him and A.J. Reeves, they can make things a little bit easier on everybody else. Hit a couple of, outside shots early, get them in the flow, let them see that ball go through the hoop, and, you know, they'll be a lot better. They'll feel good about themselves, then their defense starts to kick in. But, you know, it's, you know, don't be surprised if, you know, this is nip and tuck. You know, just like, you know, PC's battles with Wisconsin this year, with Virginia, with Villanova twice. It's, you know, they can hang. But, again, it goes down to that offense. You know, that offense feeds them. When they feel good about themselves, they work even harder on deep times. They get into those droughts offensively that, you know, we'll go back to, you know, Joe, you mentioned at the Big East tournament, you know, that 34-2 run that did them in against Creighton. You know, you cannot have any more than a two-minute drought against Kansas because they will run you out of the United Center.
Yep.
Oh,
and,
I agree. I couldn't walk.
And having said that, JC, if they go on to win, beat Kansas, and God knows he'll go further to the Elite Eight and maybe beyond, we may look at that 32 to 2 run as maybe a wake up call in the tournament. Because you want to talk about a team hitting. I haven't seen them play that badly all year. That stretch of basketball, and credit the other team on the other side, was about at Creighton at the time was about the poorest I've seen them play and the most out of sync I've seen them all season long. So you may look back at that loss as a wake-up call if they go on to do bigger and better things, but you're right. I'm looking for a close game, and if you're a PC fan, and we're all going to be watching here in this part of the country, it's going to be nail-biting time. You're going to be knuckling it. You're going to be on the edge of your seat because they can hang, JC, like you said, but don't go into any drought here on in. But what are your thoughts on, before we take a break, what – looking back at that watershed moment during the Big East tournament against Creighton.
Yeah, it is. Like you said, it is a watershed moment. It's something that Cooley can point back to. You know, also like in Butler, when he just emptied out the timeouts beginning of the second half.
Yep.
He did the same thing against Creighton and said, listen, you guys should experience it. If we don't stop this now, it doesn't matter. We will get blown out by 30. It worked against Butler. It didn't work against Creighton. So now, having had that experience, hopefully they don't see those droughts against Kansas because, you know, Kansas is a whole other level. They will not be able to overcome that against the Jayhawks. And then when you look at it, the other side of this game, for whoever wins, whether it be the Jayhawks or the Friars, you're looking at Iowa State and Miami. Not that it's easy, but it's easier on the other side.
Right, two double-digit seeds facing off. Right, so the matchup via Kansas or Providence, though I think Providence, you would think if they beat Kansas, they have to be favored against a 10 or 11 seed. You would think, and stranger things have happened. But hey, get past Kansas first. But nonetheless, Sweet 16 for the Providence College Friars for Ed Cooley, and they're a senior-laden team, and that bodes well in the tournament against a really, really deep team with good guard play in Kansas. It's a really good matchup. Could go nip and tuck. But when we come back, take a short break. We're scheduled to be joined by Jarvis Green. We're going to switch gears from the NCAA tournament to football, specifically the NFL, where, man, it just keeps – they keep feeding us stuff to talk about the NFL. We love them for that. And it happened again today, a blockbuster trade. We'll get to it more on the other side. We're going to take a break. When we come back, Joe – Chips and Crow on the Going Old School Show on blogtalkradio.com. See you in a few.
Hey, Boston. This is Sean Thornton. I might not be suiting up in the black and gold anymore, but my fight for Parkinson's and cancer research, advocacy, and support is still going strong. Through my foundation, I continue to be a protector for those in need and give back to a community that's given so much to me. Please consider joining my team and visiting thorntonfoundation.org or e2gsports.com for more information on getting involved, making a donation, and joining the fight.
This message supports the Boston Children's Hospital and the American Parkinson's Disease Association.
Welcome back to the Going Old School Show. John Crow, Johnny Sunships, yours truly, and Jill Florant here on blogtalkradio.com. If you want to join us, we're expected to be joined by Jarvis Green shortly, so we'll wait on him. When he gets here, we'll certainly bump him to the top of the list. So if you want to join us in between, you can at 516-387-1702. Thanks to Jerry Palm for talking some bracketology, CBSSports.com-wise, with us here on the Going Old School Show. And if you want to talk brackets, we can do that as well. Who's your final four? Let us know. My bracket is smashed, so we can get to that at another day. I have Kentucky in my Final Four. That ended real early. But lots to talk about. A little MLB spring training with the Red Sox coming up. Big signing on their parts. Again, waiting for Jarvis Green. But let's get to the big story of the day, guys. A blockbuster trade, and it all seemed to happen really fast. Word started floating out about noontime, JC, down in the Midwest, down in the heartland, that the Chiefs were in some contract negotiation stalled negotiations between the two. And lo and behold, he's traded. Talk about the trade. So right now, it is Tyreek Hill going to the Kansas City Chiefs, and the Chiefs get 5 draft picks back. JC, your initial thoughts now, and when you heard the news break, because you talk about blockbusters, this is a blockbuster right here.
Yeah, initial things, and I will tease some breaking news coming out of New York on the other side. But first, on this Hill trade, you know, I look at it as a win-win for both sides. And I know some Chiefs fans are going crazy because they've lost the Cheetah. But I look at it as it's something the Dolphins and, yes, even the Jets needed to pursue. And they're at a point where they need to be relevant again. So going all in and trading 5 picks for Tyreek Hill and then giving him a contract extension, yeah, that works. This will absolutely make Tua Tagovailoa better. This will make the Dolphins better. This will sell tickets. This will get you primetime games. It works. It checks off all the boxes. But I think some people nationally are forgetting and kind of riding the Chiefs off so early after this trade. They're like they're going to be fourth in the AFC West. They're not going to make the playoffs. Calm down, folks. Y'all didn't know about Tyreek Hill before Andy Reid drafted him.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't hear about the rest of that offense before they took care of it. If there's one thing I don't worry about the Chiefs is Andy Reid figuring out the offense. They will draft another player. They will get maybe MVS from Green Bay to come in. They've already gotten Juju Schuster in there as another bona fide guy in the slot. They'll be fine, folks. They'll be okay.
Yeah, unlike our team up here in New England, they know how to, like, draft players and they know how to replace players because we seem to be at a stalemate up here while everybody else seems to be getting better. But just don't put the horse before the cart before the horse because, you know, just because Hill's on that team, you got to kind of, like, be able to have the strength to throw the deep ball. So we'll see how that goes. I'll reserve my right to know if he can get a ball deep to Mr. Hill or not.
So here's the deal. Tyreek Hill goes to the Dolphins, obviously. The Chiefs get in return a 2022 first-round draft pick, which is number 29th overall, a second-round pick, which is number 50 overall, a fourth-rounder plus fourth and sixth-round picks in the year 2023. The Chiefs right now have 6 picks in the top 105. And here's a little thing I did with the Chiefs. Pro Football Focus, this is an organizational move by the Chiefs, by the way. I know I listen to Kansas City radio today. I'm a diehard fan. And you guys have heard me say it ad nauseum. Sometimes, like the Buffalo Bills did back in the year in the 90s when they went to 4, so you need to shake it up a little bit, whether voluntarily or involuntarily. And this happened maybe a little bit of both. But, you know, the past 4 years, 4 consecutive championship games for the Kansas City Chiefs, won a Super Bowl, lost a Super Bowl. I'm going to take you back to this championship game against Cincinnati because what I saw in that game was a microcosm of their whole season. They started out like a house of fire in the first half, and then I saw them revert back to the team they were in the beginning of the season when they were just confused and didn't know what happened on offense. I don't know what happened in that game, but something changed in that locker room. I originally thought it was Eric Bieniemy, and I thought he was going to part ways with him. They re-signed him for a 1-year deal. So maybe it was on the players. Maybe there was something that shook up. One thing's for sure, Patrick Mahomes was consulted before they made this deal today. So there may have been strife there. And from an organizational standpoint with the Chiefs, who Pro Football Focus had as the number one draft class all last year, it was Nick Bolton, a linebacker, second overall, 58th overall, Creed Humphrey, the center, second round, 63rd overall, who were the top 20 in the rookie class in all the NFL. Noah Gray, tight end, in the fifth round out of Duke. Trey Smith, who was a starting guard on their offensive line, sixth round, 226. Brett Beach and this organization and this management, they know how to draft. And that's where I'm lying. And that's where I'm putting my eggs in that basket, because they've shown it before. They've shown it the past couple of years. They will turn these draft picks into successful players and players that will make a difference. You're right, JC. I'm not as crazy about it. Everyone's writing him off. Again, you might not want to do that. Be careful what you wish for. Because I think with the quarterback and the coach, we saw it here in New England for 20 years. That's where it starts. And Chief fans, it's been 4 years of Kelce, Mahomes, and Hill. That's gone. The honey badger is gone. It has to change a little bit, but the DNA is still there, and that's what I think is going to reign supreme with this team. I don't say I feel good about it. On paper right now, you lose a great talent in Tariq Hill. Little dinged up last year. Heel, ankle sprain, only 3 100-yard receiving games. You may have saw teams kind of get on and maybe see the Tariq Hill and learn how to cover him a little bit more. And if he's lost a half a step, you know what? You've seen teams here in New England, Bill Belichick, they go out with players and they don't fall in love with them. Logan Mankins, Richard Seymour, Loyal Malloy, they've gone on to achieve success. So don't write this team off yet in Kansas City, JC. I agree with that. But it's an organizational move, in my opinion.
Yeah, and if there's a year that you want to go all in and have a lot of draft picks for the wide receiver position, it's this year. It's that. I mean, if you want to package up a couple of picks and go up and get a Olave out of Ohio State, you can do that. If you want to take a risk on Williams, Jameson Williams out of Alabama coming off that torn ACL and let him ease his way back in, you can do that. If you want to go out and sign a Jarvis Landry and bring him in, you can do that. If you want to make a big splash and go out and do a trade for a veteran receiver, you can do that as well. There are so many things that you can do. They have the draft capital. And, oh, yeah, they have all this money, too, that they were going to give to Tyreek Hill. What I would love to know from Hill's camp and also from the Chiefs is, what was that line? What was the breaking point? How far were they willing to go to pay him? And from Hill's side, what was your breaking point? Obviously, you're with an organization that is a Super Bowl contender year after year after year. You got one Super Bowl ring. You went to another one. You were close again last year. So maybe that doesn't matter to Tariq Hill. He got his ring, and now it's just all about money and, you know, flashing a peace sign as he runs, you know, away from another defender. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But all I know is that shows you a lot when a Super Bowl contender is willing to move you for draft picks. This far into the offseason. It speaks volumes that I agree with you, Chips. I think there was a rift there. I think they did have words after that failed attempt at the end of that first half in the championship game against the Bengals. Yeah, I think it's real. So, you know what? It's okay. They both moved their separate ways.
Mm-hmm.
They both can be successful, but I'm with you. People writing people off, listen, if there's one thing you want to write off right now on March 23rd, is that the Patriots are having a bad offseason, because – they've gone from a team that was in the playoff contention to a team that is now 11th, 12th, or 13th in the AFC.
Yeah.
I wouldn't write them off. I mean, it's like stupid that people would, but they do that all the time. It's like you take a team and, like, you lose one play and people want to write them off. It's like, no. It takes a team, and Andy Reid's an excellent coach. He's going to figure this out. He's going to get it done. It's far from over. They've got an excellent couple of running backs. They got, as long as you got Patrick Mahomes as your quarterback, you're not out of it. It's like get somebody up and it's next man up mentality, and they'll bring somebody in, and they'll be at the top of the charts again, as usual over the last 5-6 years. So nothing's going to change. You can write them off all you want. Just give them some bulletin board material. Nothing better for an NFL player to have some bulletin board material.
Yep. Coming into the classroom with us, if you'd like, 516-371-7702, Chips, Crow, and Joe live on blogtalkradio.com on the Going Old School podcast, still waiting for Jarvis Green to be called. But let's talk about it from a Patriots standpoint, JC. You know, I think you put it, I saw you texted. When we texted, I think you may have put it on your Twitter as well, that right now, to rank the teams in the AFC East, it is Buffalo number one, It is Miami number two. And granted, they have to play the games. And is the Patriots a distant three, in my opinion, and more closer to the New York Jets at fourth than they are to Miami and Buffalo? Again, wait and see. But let's talk about the Patriots, the division, and from a Miami standpoint, what that does for Tua Tagovailoa. JC, your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, because of the way that the offseason has progressed so far, not only just with the Patriots, but, you know, what other teams are moving, because that's how you grade yourself is, you know, based up against what other people are doing around you, whether they're getting better. And, yes, I mean, the Patriots have some traction. J.C. Jackson going to the Chargers, Shaq Mason going to the Bucks. You get rid of Kyle Van Noy. Get rid of Gorner, Olszewski, you know, all over the place. But all you've done is re-sign your own guys, you know, with McCourty and with Ryan Hoyer and Matthew Slater. And, oh, yeah, today, Malcolm Butler returning after a year off of football and coming back for a two-year contract, incentive-laden as it may be, for $9 million. And, huh, gee, I wonder what the first question will be with Malcolm Butler. Come on. Faces the media. But I look at the Patriots and what they have. They're not as good a team as the one that got blown out in Buffalo. So we still have the draft to go. We still have the second wave of free agency to go. So, yeah, I won't judge them completely on March 23rd, but it's all we have to go for right now. And right now, the Bills are the stars. Not only are they who they were when we last saw them against the Chiefs, but they've gotten better. They've gotten so much better than they were, you know, with the additions of Von Miller and Saffold and the rest. And now you're the Dolphins. I mean, Tyreek Hill, Cedric Wilson, offensive weapons. You got Teron Armstead to shore up the tackle position, to protect Tua, to give him an extra second to get that ball out and see what he's made of. They signed, you know, Chase Edmonds from Arizona in the backfield. Raheem Mostert in the backfield as well. They're stacked offensively, and that's when they already had Gesicki at tight end. They had Parker. I mean, and oh no, by the way, Tua's already beaten you the last three times. So let's put that out there when we look at the divisional race. So the Patriots have to, one, hope that the guys that they got last year and Mac Jones, the second year progression, is a big jump. Because otherwise, I don't know how this team matches up, because they haven't gotten younger. They haven't gotten faster. I mean, thankfully, they signed Trent Brown to kind of shore up the offensive line this week. But, you know, they've got a lot of work to do. And that's saying they can't do it. I mean, it's after all, it is March 23rd. There are so many things they can do. The problem is I don't see that urgency from Bill Belichick. Did he even bother to make a phone call to the Chiefs to see if there was any interest in anything that he had to offer, phone call to Kansas City to see if you can at least counter with something, you know, be in the mix of what's going on in the current day NFL. And I, you know, we continue to talk about what Bill Belichick, he just wants to bring back the guys that he wants, the guys that he knows. And, you know, unfortunately, I think we're left with a team in 2022 that's kind of just there and that they'll spend money again next year. Because they'll have to, just like they did last year. And it's unfortunate to see a team that was so good consistently for 20 years now kind of in that in 1 year, out the next, in 1 year, out the next kind of a mode. Because I don't know if Robert Kraft, you know, if he's even paying attention anymore, but it can't be something that he's happy with. Even though he's part of the problem because he won't spend the money this year, even though he has.
Come on, what's the matter, JP? You don't like the idea of you brought slow motion Bentley back and, you know, the Butler's back and, you know, the first question is, what game are you going to get benched in this year? I mean, what game are you going to start this year? Hey, yeah, I agree with you. It's like head scratching time, big time, and like, they're not even like have any urgency for the plan B guys. It's like, you know, they're not even, you know, after the first wave, they're not even, like, being active in the second wave. So I'm like, oh, all right, so what's Bill up to? And it's like, that means he's putting a massive amount of pressure on the draft of hitting gold on every single pick, or at least
75% of the picks and get somebody to go with Barmore, get a speed at the middle linebacker position. Oh, wait, we got Jonathan Jones coming back at cornerback. That's nice because we'll see his number all the time chasing the wide receivers down the field. We're going to play a lot more zone, get torn apart by the Josh Allens of the world. And the only thing the Miami Dolphins have favor for them as far as getting to the playoffs besides us sucking is the AFC West is going to beat each other up to the fact of they're going to pound each other, so Miami should have an easier road to get to the playoffs. But, yeah, we're solid third, you know, maybe a step above the Jets. I can't believe I'm saying that, but it's the truth. It's like we're falling. It's, you know, the Tom Petty song, when the Patriots take the field in preseason, should be free falling. That should be the theme of the Patriots this year.
Joe, speaking of the Jets, we have a Lou's on the line, but JT, Lou, we'll get you in 1 second, but JT, you have some breaking news for us?
Yeah, and first and foremost, it affects the Boston Celtics because tomorrow it's going to be announced in New York that Mayor Eric Adams is going to lift the ban on players who are unvaccinated. So that means not only will the Yankees and Mets players now get to play home games, but when Kyrie Irving now returns as a full member of the Brooklyn Nets, and that should scare the bejesus out of everybody in the Eastern Conference.
Yep, and we'll talk about that later in the show because they could be the favorites right now to represent the Eastern Conference in the finals. Let's get to our buddy Lou here with calling from New Jersey, a resident Jets fan. Lou, how are you doing today, bud? Yes.
Well, until I heard the announcement about Tyreek Hill going to the Dolphins, I was fine. That came up, and then I went to go throw up. So you can imagine my disgust.
Well, let me ask you a question, Lou. The Jets were involved in it. Was the Jets? Do you know anything about what the Jets offered? Because it was the Jets and Dolphins who were one and two, the only two teams really in the mix.
Yeah, but they still. But even I heard that. Well, the Jets didn't offer enough as Miami did. So obviously they. Those offers. But just when you think the Jets are going to get a break, you know, then this happens. And
right.
That means it was going to be another step backwards for us, unfortunately.
But here's the silver lining. I'm going to give you a silver lining because there's a silver lining in every dark cloud.
Please do.
Lou, right now, you are much closer to the New England Patriots who dominated the division for the past 20 years. That's the silver lining. Climb one. It's like if you're trying to reach the playoffs and you have teams to climb, as a Jets fan, your goal is to win the division, so you need to climb one team at a time. Buffalo and Miami right now have separated themselves. So right now, you want to climb over the New England Patriots. And I think you're much closer with what the guys were talking about with a New England team that seems to be stuck in neutral at best, Lou. I mean, your Jets are up and coming, and you're going to make moves. It's what are we going to see from him? Go ahead.
Well, you know, the thing is, though, that since, you know, the Patriots lost Brady and the Gronk, I mean, they have taken a step backwards. So, you know, I mean, they're not the same team that won, you know, six Super Bowls, thank goodness. So, you know, maybe it's a sign that, you know, that we can catch them. I say, where are we going to catch them? But maybe, you know, somewhere in another 3 or 5 years, maybe we will. I mean, Brady leaving the Patriots was a blessing to us.
Right.
Of course, now I got to see what we can do with Daddy Boy.
JC or Joe, do you want to talk to Lou? Have any little statement for Lou while he's on the line?
Yeah. I mean, Lou, you've got to be at least happy that the Jets are willing to at least make moves to surround Zach Wilson with some weapons, something that we're not willing to do here in New England with Mac Jones.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I guess that could be one cloud that was over the silver lining. But now we need more than that. We got to see how Wilson does it because he made a lot of mistakes last year. Well, most rookies do, but he's got to do better than what he did last year if he's going to give us, you know, any hope at all. Got to get more around him. So hopefully we'll get some good draft picks again this year, and maybe they can work around Zach.
Well,
otherwise, it's going to be another disappointment.
I guess you got bad news Monday, Lou, when Jamison Crowder signed with the Buffalo Bills to get their slot receiver, and you guys lost another slot receiver. But you guys should be fine. Look, catch up to the – shouldn't be worried about the Patriots anymore. It's the Dolphins and the Bills you need to worry about when it's like
– more so the Bills.
Stop worrying about the Patriots. We're free-falling. We're coming down to you, and you guys just need to climb up and climb over us to get to the Dolphins. So
climb over them, step on them, anything I can do, anything we can do.
Lou, tell us about where people can hear your podcast, because I know you're into the sports realm anyway, so the floor is yours for the moment.
All right. Yes, the Enhanced Sports Show, Saturdays, 5 to 7 p.m. East Coast time. Number to call is 512-543-4662. I'll repeat it again, 512-543-4662. You can also find me on Facebook, and you can reach me through my Gmail account at loutenor45@capitalgmail.com. You must capitalize on the G, otherwise you don't get through. And I hope you can call in this Saturday because it's going to be a very special show. No, I'm not gonna give it away. If you want to find out what it is, you'll have to call and find out for yourself.
There you go.
Oh boy, am I, aren't I?
It's all good. It's all about the keys. Hey man, thanks, and take care of yourself up there down there in New Jersey. Okay, bud.
You too up there.
Thanks, man.
Have a good day.
That's our P1 Lou. I mean, I'm going to get a little shameless plug because he calls us and he's kind of nice to do that. But, JC, you point out a good point. At least they're making efforts, right? I mean, if you're a Pats fan, it doesn't frustrate you that much. And I'm not speaking for you, but Pats fans, call in at 516-387-1702. Does it bother you to the point where the Jets are actually making moves and you're not to make the team better? I mean, JC, that was a great point.
Yeah.
And that's what it's all about.
Yeah, I mean, this is the time. This is the time you should be able to go out, spend money, make those big splashes, because you're in year two of a rookie quarterback contract. By year three, you should be able to easily evaluate what you're going to do with a rookie quarterback moving forward or cut and bait, because you're moving into year four of that contract. You got to know what you've got. But unless you give him a fighting chance, how are you going to evaluate them? That's why the move with the Dolphins and Tyreek Hill makes so much sense for them, because they are on the fence with Tua. Now they can say, hey, we gave you everything. If you can't perform now, well, then time to get out. And what makes it even better, their move with Teddy Bridgewater last week as the number two. Jacoby Brissett moved on. Teddy Bridgewater came in on an affordable backup quarterback. And the rumor is he was told that he, yes, can compete for that starting quarterback. And he's going to be licking his chops to have a guy like Tyreek Hill out there. Because even if you can't throw the ball deep, all you got to do is give him a bubble screen and let him run. So, you know, at least they're trying. And I just don't see Bill Belichick doing anything different to help his quarterback. And it just makes you feel, as a fan and as one who covers the team as much, you know, as long as we all have, that all those times when he said he would make decisions for what's best for the team, it's just the nonsense, because you're not doing that now. So if you're going to check out, that's fine. Tell your owner, I'm going to check out and let somebody else run the team.
Agreed, because it's like, and if you're going to let somebody else run the team, don't let your son anywhere near the reins. Please, I beg you, don't let Steve anywhere near it, because he's showing that he can't run a defense, never mind a team. And there's no sense of urgency right now in the Patriots and Bill at all. It seems like there's just no sense of it, of like, that we're going to get things done. It's like, ho-hum, we'll do it. It's like, and it's just not the same as it used to be run, so I just don't know what's happening. I wish it could be a fly on the wall down there.
And you know, the thing that baffles me, when we talked about it, JC and Joe, is it's the plan. What's the plan? I mean, and usually with moves, you can say, okay, they're looking to shore this up, they're looking to do this, to improve this, whatever, yada, 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 go on and on and on. But with every move, we're scratching our heads, as opposed to saying, okay, maybe there's a plan. There's no plan, JC. I mean, they leave us no inkling of what the intentions are going into next year.
Yeah, and you know what scares me out of all this is that Robert Kraft used to be a guy who would talk to the media and raises concerns about what's going on with this team. And it just makes you think that he has signed off on this. He thought his team should have given him more dividends than what they gave him last year after signing as much as he did and spending as much as he did. So maybe, you know, Bill's just doing what he's told here, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we're putting too much emphasis in the blame on his lap. Maybe his boss has just told him, listen, there's nothing out there for you to spend it on. I'm not giving you guaranteed money. I'm not going to go out there and give you what I gave you last year, even though it could be done by manipulating the caps. I mean, it so easily could. But maybe Robert Kraft told him, nope, not going to do it. Sorry.
Mm-hmm.
What we get is what we get. And Bill's just saying, okay, I'm not going to make myself look like an ass and reach out to these guys and, you know, offer them stuff that we can't. I mean, when you look at when they go to Ted Karras and they say 3 for 18 and then go 3 for 15, it goes down. And then they check in on the wide receivers. And, you know, when they try to offer a 3-year contract for $30 million, and that's as far as they'll go for Russell Gage, who ultimately signed that deal in Tampa. You know, it just makes you think that, all right, maybe they're just saying 2022 is what it is. The boss is giving us this. We've all been in jobs with, you know, the boss says, this is it. And we're all like, all right, we're on autopilot then. So maybe that's it. But it's not like anybody in Foxborough will ever discuss anything in detail to let you know, because the owner is MIA and Belichick mm-hmm. never tells you anything, and he's allowed to do that. So as a fan base, we're left to just say, I don't know.
All you need to know is Matthew Judon reached out to players and tried to get players to come here, and nobody bit on it. Nobody even, like, budged on it, which tells you we're not a destination anymore. At one point, we were the destination. Now we're not even on the blip of any of these free agents, because why would they come here? Why would they even want to come here? Whereas they're going to other teams, a.k.a. the Buffalo Bills, the AFC West, any other team, and we're just not a lucrative spot to land anymore. It was
and isn't it sad
before.
That Matthew Judon has to go on social media to do that?
Yep. But before, you'd put up with not making a lot of money for championships. Now guys are saying, screw you, I want some money. If I want to go
yep.
there, I want some money.
And if you're not a destination, you've got to pay. And that's where they are now, the Patriots, who have gotten away with 20 years of Plan B bliss, if you will. But we'll see what happens as it folds up. But we're going to try to put the football talk on hold. Jarvis hasn't called in yet. If he does, we'll get it back, get his opinion on a couple of things. But when we come back after the break, JC with the breaking news that the mandate may be lifted in New York, and we're going to talk about the balance of power in the Eastern Conference of the NBA. Celtics are playing great, but may have just changed a little bit. We'll talk more about that on the other side. This is the Going Old School show, Chips, Crow, and Joe on blogtalkradio.com.
Hey, Boston. This is Sean Thornton. I might not be suiting up in the black and gold anymore, but my fight for Parkinson's and cancer research, advocacy, and support is still going strong. Through my foundation, I continue to be a protector for those in need and give back to a community that's given so much to me. Please consider joining my team and visiting ThorntonFoundation.org or E2GSports.com for more information on getting involved, making a donation, and joining the fight.
This message supports the Boston Children's Hospital and the American Parkinson Disease Association.
Fancy a podcast about the New England Patriots? Join me, Claire Clazzy, Claire Cooper, Steve Balestreri, and Thomas Smurf Murphy as we talk all things Patriots with some of the greatest football minds out there. Every week on One Patriots Place, exclusively to E2G Sports.
Welcome back to the Going Old School show. Chips, Crow, and Joe here on blogtalkradio.com, March 23rd, Wednesday, hump day of 2022, 516-387-1702. It's wide open now, whatever you want to talk about sports-wise, entertainment-wise. We're game. Give us a jingle if you like, 516-387-1702. But, JC, if you want to repeat the breaking news, or on the heels of the breaking news, the Brooklyn Nets may be able to go full boat, and that means Kyrie Irving could be in the mix. which changes everything for a team that, on paper, without Kyrie Irving, could do damage in the playoffs in the NBA. But with Kyrie Irving in the fall, that changes the whole landscape in the Eastern Conference, JC. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah. Yeah, no question. And, you know, the breaking news that New York Mayor Eric Adams is going to lift the mandate that unvaccinated players couldn't play at home. Well, they're going to be able to do that possibly as soon as tomorrow. When you look at their schedule, I mean, right now they're only 3 games out of the 6th spot, you know, 9 games back in the East. They have Charlotte, mm-hmm. Detroit, and Milwaukee coming up after road games with Memphis and Miami. So starting on Sunday, they could have Kyrie back in Brooklyn. And, you know, it just makes it almost impossible now for any team to kind of play that game of where you want to be seated and kind of tank it a little bit, because you have no idea where those Nets, you know, are going to land. And that was basically, you know, I know it's crazy that teams wanted to stay out of that number one seed. That's where Miami is, 2 games over Milwaukee right now, because they thought the Nets would squeak in, win the play-in, and be that. But now they might have a chance to avoid the play-in game whatsoever and be that fifth or sixth seed. So it'll be interesting how teams play it out. As far as the Celtics, they got the toughest 9 games left of any team down the stretch, and they're going to have, you know, they're going to have to make a decision at some point, you know, when they have those three road games to end the season, Chicago, Milwaukee, and at Memphis to close the season. You know, will it be rest? Will it be continue to play well? It'll be very interesting to see how they handle it, because they've been the hottest team since January 4th, and they've completely turned their season around. They've been number one defensively, and I hope they just continue to play, because at this point in the season, it's about playing your best. And to put any player's mind that you can manipulate things, that may send them down a road that this team does not need. As we've seen in the past, where sometimes when adversity hits them, they tend to jump in the pool with both heads, you know, firmly above their heads. They've done a great job the last 2 months looking adversity right in the face and saying, I'll take you on, and coming back. Perfect example was that game Monday night. Back end of a back-to-back games at Denver, at Oklahoma City. They were up by 20-plus, and all of a sudden here comes the Thunder, and they whittled it down to 7. 2 months ago, the Celtics lose that game. They took themselves up, picked themselves up, and they won that game, and they moved back home. Utah tonight. So the East just got a whole lot tougher tomorrow, thanks to Mayor Eric Adams. That's for sure.
Yeah. It got tougher, but let's be serious, JC. Nobody wanted to face Kevin Durant. Nobody wants to face Kevin Durant, because the man is a scoring machine lately. And it's like, even without Kyrie, Kevin Durant would be a handful in the playoffs. And it looks like he's a man on a mission as far as that goes. So, I mean, now just Kyrie makes it even worse. But, yeah, the East is totally up for grabs now. It's like, you know, where they're going to finish season-wise, who knows. But it's going to be tough playoff matchups no matter where you go, up and down the East this playoff season. So, should be some interesting, some good playoff basketball for once.
And a big game tonight, and the Celtics have been rolling, but you're facing a really good Utah team tonight, a really good Utah team, which is fourth in the Western Conference behind Phoenix, Memphis, and Golden State, and Golden State sort of coming on hard times at Seth out. So you look at litmus tests here and there, and, JC, you look at opponents, and the waiting for the shooter drop mentality, at least with me, is, you know, you talked about OKC the other night and 25-point lead and whittling it down to 7. I want to see how this team does against a real good team in this sort of situation, because, and I'm still not convinced of the Celtics team, because if you get Brooklyn, you get Steph Curry healthy again, you get Kyrie back in the mix, you get Durant, who's the best player in the world, and I like Miami better, than arguably both of those teams. But you're looking at even the Celtics with Brooklyn healthy. In my opinion, the third best team in that conference. So they're going to have to keep this up, and they're going to face adversity coming up. And we're going to need to see them keep coming back and coming and looking at adversity in the face and not caving to it like you had said. But it's a good matchup tonight against. If they can do good decent damage and win this game against Utah, that'll tell me something tonight, albeit everything they've done prior to this.
Yeah, and it's always that first game back from the West Coast trip that worries you. You try to get a little comfortable. You've got everything that you have to deal with at home for the first time in a week. And, with the Celtics, you've got 5 of the next 6 at home before you end up on the road. You only have a game in Toronto in the middle of that, and then you close up on the road on that 3-game road trip. But it is another test for this team. And if you're Ime Udoka, it's a good test because you just – as many things as you can keep to get those guys engaged along the way down the stretch here in these final 9, that's a good thing, I think, because it just keeps those distractions away. It gives you one more teaching moment for this team, and they need it, from where they've been. And it's, they get Rob Williams back tonight. They get Mark Smart back tonight. So I like to see the fight for them because, a couple of months ago, we were looking at a team that was playing bound, and now we're looking at a team that, as of right now, the predictions are that they're going to come out of the East and possibly win the NBA Finals. So they're not quite there for me yet, but that's what the pundits are looking at this team, and it's a far better cry than where we were 8 weeks ago, guys.
And speaking of another Boston team not named the Patriots who are willing to go all in and win is the Boston Bruins, who finally get a left-handed shot defenseman. May have cost them a fortune, but they actually went out and got one. They picked themselves up a defenseman. It cost them a first-round pick, a couple of first-round picks, a couple of players, which weren't really going to be used, so... And the only bad thing is they kept a guy named Jake DeBrusk around, but, let's see if he's motivated to finish off. Look, it could be a good thing. It could be a bad thing. It's like sign a little contract, see what he does for the rest of the year, then tell him you could possibly move him at the end of the year. But it may have motivated him to play better and to have a good playoff run. And it looks like this team is kind of set to at least get past the first round of the playoffs and possibly go deep into the playoff run this year, which is – kind of refreshing for the Bruins.
And you would think that in the Bruins locker room, obviously you can see DeBrus kind of tanking it and he's got his money. I don't want to be here anyway, so I'm nothing to lose. But you would think that Bergeron, Marchand, and to a lesser extent, some of the leaders, meaning Charlie McAvoy, took him aside and said, okay, guys, Jake, you're here. Let's work this and let's get the Stanley Cup. Let's get to the playoffs. No more distractions. Just get all on the same page because, man, what's going through his head now? Because he could go either way, Jake DeBrus. But one thing's certain, he doesn't want to be here. Granted, he signed for whatever the reason, but he's not going to be here in a Bruin uniform next year. So he has, improve your status. Go out with a bang. It increases your value. So I would think that in the locker room, with the addition of the defensive from Anaheim and Jake DeBrus staying there, maybe these two forces collide, and it makes for a good thing, JC.
Yeah, Hampus Lindholm, pairing him up with Charlie McAvoy, it gives you a legitimate 1-2 defensively.
Yep.
And Lindholm can help you offensively as well, help you a little on the power play if need be. It's a good thing. And when I firmly believe that hockey players, once you get past that trade deadline, as much as Jake DeBrus and his agent wanted out of here, well, guess what? You get to redo your contract, and now you're here. Once you're on that run past the deadline and you're on a way to the Stanley Cup playoffs, I think you turn, the light turns. So he's playing the best he's ever played. Hopefully they continue to tap into that because the only way he's going to get out of town in the offseason is continue to show what he's worth. And tanking at this point serves nobody's interest. Not DeBrusk, not the Bruins. So you know what? Do what you did, you know, bang a late goal Monday night in Montreal, win it in overtime with Brad Marchand, and keep going. Ride Jeremy Swayman as far as he'll take you. See if he has the moxie to be a number one goalie, you know, when he's facing the pressure in the Stanley Cup playoffs. It's a great place to be in. Yes, they paid big dividends to go get Lindholm, but you know what? Right after, they signed him to an 8-year extension, annual value $6 million, which is very doable. Listen, they're in a far better place because, let's be honest, the last three drafts from the Bruins haven't done diddly. So losing draft picks, I don't care. Let's see if you can win now because you are at the later stages of Bergeron and Marchand and, you know, a few others. So let's see what you can do. And it's so interesting to see, you know, we keep bringing that word up about interesting, and it's you're talking about the Celtics, the Bruins, and, yes, even the Red Sox making a huge move with Mr. Story, with Trevor Story now back in Boston as a new second baseman. They're making moves when the Patriots aren't. So, yeah, I mean, it's almost like things are just kind of thrown up in the air and they're upside down these days. But it's a great thing because it's amazing that you can talk about three teams that have legitimate designs for deep playoff runs and none of their names are Patriots.
I'm looking forward to the fact of what Lindholm does for me is when we play heavy teams like the Columbus Blue Jackets or the Carolina Hurricanes and we get beat on the backside because the defense is not big enough, now we have another good pairing that can't get beat on. Like, we should do better. We should play better against heavy teams. Hopefully we do. It's like hopefully the bus solidifies that first line and keeps it up because now we have two legitimate scoring lines and the third line. It looks good with Coyle, and Coyle's better on the third line than the second line. So, I mean, we could definitely, but a lot of other teams got better at the trade deadline, the Tampa Bay Lightning. A lot of teams made a move. So, again, like the basketball, it should be some interesting hockey playoff time because nothing better than playoff hockey. Nothing.
Agreed.
Except baseball, arguably. And let me say, we're going to take a 30-second break. Let me come back. JC brought up Trevor Story. We're going to talk about baseball, the ramifications of the Red Sox, and the future with Xander Bogaerts. And the guys are going to take us into the squared circle, talk some wrestling, some thoughts on Monday Night Raw, which I love to start up. We'll get into that next right after the break. But 30 seconds away, more of the Going Old School show. Chips, Joe, and Crow on the other side.
Hey, Boston. This is Sean Thornton. I might not be suiting up in the black and gold anymore, but my fight for Parkinson's and cancer research at...
Hold on, what's
that? Hey, Boston. This is Sean Thornton. I might not be suiting up in the black and gold anymore, but my fight for Parkinson's and cancer research, advocacy, and support is still going strong. Through my foundation, I continue to be a protector for those in need and give back to a community that's given so much to me. Please consider joining my team and visiting thorntonfoundation.org or e2gsports.com for more information on getting involved, making a donation, and joining the fight.
This message supports the Boston Children's Hospital and the American Parkinson Disease Association.
In the classroom with Joe, Crow, and Chips, Going Old School show, blogtalkradio.com, Wednesday, March 23rd, about another 20 minutes or so, give or take. But JC, I'm going to start with, let's talk a little baseball. Trevor Story, we were just wondering if they're going to, speaking of emptying pocketbooks or wallets or what have you, or opening the vault, you know, up until this point, the biggest contract was Keke Hernandez, 2 years, $14 million, up until the Trevor Story signing, 6 years, $140 million. He can opt out after a fourth year. Xander Bogaerts, who kind of welcomed him in and kind of paved the way, gave Trevor Story a call, ironically enough. He's shortstop. We know Trevor Story is a natural shortstop. He'll play second base. Xander Bogaerts is as an opt-out at the end of this season. So putting two and two together, could we be seeing Trevor Story being welcomed in by a guy he's going to replace in a couple of years? Because We know Xander and Rafael Devers are going to get big contracts, and the word is now that Xander is going to go to free agency because he's going to command a lot of money. But Trevor Story, you like the signing?
I love it. It gives you that insurance policy because, you know, up till now, you know, the extension that Xander Bogart signed was very team-friendly, and it's about to come home to roost, you know, when he opts out at the end of this year and see what he fully will get because there will be no hometown discounts this time. But if you're Heim Bloom, you can now say, hey, I've gone out and spent some money. You know, ownership has allowed me to go and make that big splash. What you got to do is you got to go re-sign the other two. You got to, you know, make sure Devers and Bogart stay here if you want to continue to keep that young, you know, core together. But it does give you the insurance to do it. You know, they say that they want to follow the Jeter. You know, when A-Rod came to the Yankees, Derek Jeter didn't move. And Xander Bogaerts made no bones about it that he didn't want to move. And so far, they haven't moved him. So that should give them at least a little leeway in contract negotiations to say, hey, we didn't force you over. We could have got the story here and made you move. We didn't. So maybe there's some good faith there and to move forward. Because that is the next step for them is to kind of keep this core together because you have those three together. You have Tristan Cassis, you know, whether he – shows potential to be there this year, next year. You know, they got Mayer in a few years coming up, you know, to be that middle infielder, or maybe he'll have to move to center field. Who knows? So, I mean, there are good things looming on the horizon for the Red Sox, but this is something they needed to do, especially after the moves the Blue Jays made, you know, the last few weeks, you know, with Chapman and Guzman. You know, they definitely are the favorites. The Blue Jays are in the East, so they just keep pace with them, and they've done that. They're a legitimate playoff team in the American League now. So, but now the question is, you know, can you round that out? Can you get another, you know, mid-level starting pitcher because Sale can't, you know, go the first, you know, month of the season because of the ribcage injury, and you know, can you shore up that closer position? So there's still tons of work to be done, but. I mean, it's a pretty good team they got going on here.
Mm-hmm. I like what they're doing. I like the team they've got going on. They've showed up the defense in the outfield with JBJ. They've got themselves a second baseman that they haven't seen in a long time as far as defensive-wise on that side of the field. Yeah, we need a good couple of relievers. We need a closer, and we need a legitimate starter. So can they find them? Can they get one? Only time will tell. It's like it's a short spring training, so you don't have the luxury of you've had other years where you've got to do it quickly and you really don't have time to look around. So you got to go with what you got and hope Hine find somebody.
Regarding Trevor Story, are we a little bit concerned about the rarefied air that he played in Colorado and the splits, as opposed to, you can say, the hitter-friendly park in Boston and Fenway with the wall, opposite field stuff. But you know, it's not fiction to know that some players, you know, leave Colorado and they're just not as effective. Okay.
Yeah, and everyone will point to Troy Tulowitzki when he left. And he went to Toronto, but he was injured when he left. And, you know, he's kind of washed up when by the time that he got to Toronto. And, you know, Story's one of these guys, plays every day, hard-nosed, consistent. I worry less about a guy like him. I mean, you do the overlays, he would have hit 38 home runs, you know, if he had played at Fenway Park last year. And he brought up a really good point during his press conference about the altitude and the conditioning, which leaving Colorado will help him during the season, not having to adjust to that for 81 games. So, you know, I worry about it less with a guy like him. You know, point toward, you know, Nelson Arenado when he went to the Cardinals. No drop-off. So will there be an adjustment? Absolutely. There always is when you have to play and look at that thing, look at the monster staring at your face 81 days. Yeah, the temptation is real. Just ask Jack Clark. We all remember he couldn't adjust. He wanted to kill that thing. But, you know,
yeah.
I think Trevor Story is a good enough player to make those adjustments.
Stop making me feel old when you bring up guys like Jack Clark, JC. That's me why you say Dave Pittman.
Right?
Guys couldn't adjust. I agree. They see the wall and they thought it was easier. They think it's easier to put it over that wall. Easier said than done.
Right?
Sometimes you just get up and swing the ball. Look at that story stat here. I didn't break the splits down, but, you know, 2016, home was 27 following, 24 the next year, 37, 35 in 59 games in 2020, 11. 24 home was last year, 75 RBI, a career 272 hitter, OPS 863. That's good. But you're right. I mean, leadership and hey, you don't have to – he doesn't have to be the power guy. Just spray it to all different kinds of fields. I like the move. Today, Red Sox were undefeated in spring training until today. They lost 10-4 to the Twins. They are now 7-1. Nathan Eovaldi is a key to me. Obviously, health-wise, you saw what he did last year. Four perfect innings today, striking out six. So it's all going to come down to pitching, guys.
Yeah, he looked real good, you know. And, you know, I like, you know, even with the bench guys, Ryan Fitzgerald with a cut three-run home run, his second of the spring, you know, brought them back 4-4, and then Connor Seabold, you know, just, you know, peed down his leg in the eighth inning with, you know, three or four walks and, you know, 10,000 runs. But, you know, that's going to happen. Right. He won't be here. He'll be in Worcester. So, but it raises the question, who is going to be in this bullpen for them as far as the back end? Josh Taylor already has a back injury, so he's probably going to start the season on injured reserve. And where does Matt Barnes go into this? Ryan Brazier didn't look well today. So, it's his first outing, so I'll give him a pass on that. But who is going to be the guys that's going to step up? You don't have Adam Onavita here. He's down with the Mets. So, you know, it would be nice to see a plan and not just a bullpen by committee being rolled out here by Cora.
Joe, let me ask you a question. Joey, following that up.
Yep.
Trevor Houck, right? If they don't have a closer, they know that they want to work him into the rotation. But I think the closer is Matt Barnes, but you got to see if he can rebound from last year with the spider attack, see what you want. But if they don't have a closer, Joe, do they entertain Houck as a possible closer, much less a bullpen guy? Tanner Houck, man, not Trevor.
Yeah, no, I know you. No, you meant would they entertain it? Well, how much would it mess with his psyche, and would it be a permanent thing? Because you can't just say, "Yeah, we'll do it this year," and then put him back into a starting rotation next year. So, yeah, they could entertain the thought, but they really would have to think hard and long to see if it would benefit both the team and Tanner. Because you can't. You would mess with a guy if he fails miserably. You're talking about possibly messing him up permanently, just over a 6-month period. Because you've seen guys' psyche. I don't know. You could entertain the thought, but only they know what his psyche is and if he could handle the rigors of getting shelled one day and getting called upon the next day to forget about what happened the day before and just go out there and pitch. I would like
Joe,
to get I would entertain the thought.
JC, a quick thought on that before we go to wrestling about Tanner Houck potentially being in the bullpen, much less closer.
Two words for you. Daniel Bard. They messed him
Thank
up
you.
For
Thank
years
you.
Until he finally got back on this. He finally got him back to an all-star this year in Colorado. So now leave Houck and Whitlock. Let them stretch them out. And whether you want him to be a fifth starter or a mid guy on the back end of that bullpen, that's fine, but not a closer. No.
Okay, guys. So a little over 10 minutes left in the show, like you do it at the end of every Going Old School podcast. Joe and Crow take me into the squared circle, so about 10 minutes. But I do have to say one thing, guys. Monday Night Raw, Kevin Owens, that was a riot. That was some of the best theater that I've seen in WWE. JC, start with you. And guys, for the rest of the show, let's talk some wrestling, shall we?
Yeah, I mean, Monday Night Raw, it had been down, the past few weeks has been amazing, especially they've kind of let Kevin Owens run free. He was outstanding doing his cosplay of Stone Cold Steve Austin and yanking with the crowd, playing his music not once but twice, and trying to fool them into thinking that Stone Cold was there. Great stuff.
So good.
Amazing tag team by the women with Rhea Ripley, Liv Morgan, getting everybody involved with Shayna Baszler, Natalya, Queen Zelina, and Carmella. That was awesome. And Seth Rollins and AJ Styles in an amazing main event. And what I want to throw to Joe and to you, Chips, they're playing this angle with Seth Rollins. He lost to Owens last week, doesn't take his spot. Lost to Styles this week, doesn't take his spot. He's threatening to hold up Raw this Monday night in Pittsburgh. I throw this out, and everyone thinks that he's going to face Cody Rhodes at WrestleMania, and that's going to be the play. I throw this out as a caveat. What if they just promise him a moment at WrestleMania, and at some point, either Saturday or Sunday night, Seth Rollins is sitting there in the ring awaiting who he's going to face, and then, bung, the gong goes off, the Undertaker comes down, beats the holy hell out of Seth Rollins for 2 minutes, and he gets a major send-off that he didn't get because his WrestleMania moment was during the pandemic when he faced AJ Styles. What do we think?
It could be done, yeah. And Seth Rollins is a guy that could make that happen because he's a good – he can take a good bump and make it seem like he really took a good bump. So that could be possibly that – but I don't have enough faith in the creative team to do something like that. But that's neither here nor there. But that would be excellent, excellent way of doing it, of going off. Or they could pull a CM Punk-like move and throw a dagger at EAW. And I wouldn't put it past Vince to do something like that, neither.
JC, I love the idea.
How they're gonna...
Go ahead, Jeff. Go ahead, Jeff.
No,
I was just going to say, well, you said, one thing's for sure. If they don't do what you just said because it's so creative, then they're missing the boat and you're in the wrong business. I'll leave it at that. You know what I think about you and some of the things you talk about with wrestling. You have the foresight. So that would be good. That would be just if they needed it. But what Joe said, do they have the creativity to even think that? Go ahead, John. You guys.
Yeah, it'll be interesting because, I mean, obviously the crowd thinks it's going to be Cody. They've been chanting his name for two-plus weeks now, and they haven't really, you know, squashed that at all. But they don't really need Cody Rhodes at WrestleMania, per se. They could leave him for the night after WrestleMania. It's in Dallas, and that's when they kind of, everything changes hands. The crowd's a real, real big part of the night after WrestleMania. So it could be a beautiful way to say, hey, Cody's back. We're going to change directions. We're going to let people be who they are. And that could be part of his whole shtick coming in. And, you know, set him on a new program instead of just throwing him into a program with Seth Rollins just for WrestleMania. So I'm with Joe. I don't have any faith in the creative, you know. If your name isn't Lesnar, Reigns, Flair, or Rousey, they just don't have the creative plans for you. And it's unfortunate because there are so many guys on this roster and women on this roster that deserve better. I mean, we're sitting here a week away from WrestleMania. Intercontinental champ doesn't have a match. United States champion does not have a match. I mean, what are we doing here?
Who's Lashley facing? Anybody?
Nobody. He's out with the shoulder injury, but now they're putting out feelings that he might face almost, and he might, come back early. Who knows? And come back as a face even.
Oh, God. Yeah, no. I don't like him as a face. I like his wrestling, but as a face, no. And I would love the creative team to let Undertaker go out with a bang. And not to change subjects, but AEW tonight, you're going to watch MJF because he's going to be doing a promo. MJF is going to speak tonight, and usually that's pretty good stuff. The guy is pretty good on the mic.
Yeah, he's gold on the mic, man. He's the one guy in that company that can go head-to-head with CM Punk and will captivate you for a good 10 to 15 minutes, which, you know, most of these guys and gals can't do it, you know, in this day and age. And, you know, that's one of the knocks on AEW. Some of the stuff is just a little forced and a little rushed because they're just trying to get so much in those 2 hours. And, but, yeah, CM Punk returns tonight. He's going to wrestle for the first time since that dog collar match versus MJF. And, you know, I want to see where they go. You know, how far do they push MJF and Wardlow?
Yeah, and Jericho's back tonight, so let's see where they're going to go with him and see what they do with his. I don't like where they're going with it, but let's see what they do with his new faction. And I guess the Sting and Darby are teaming up with the Hardys tonight to go a 8-man tag team. I'm not a fan of 8-man tag teams, just not enough room in the ring, not enough action. They'll break down into hell, and I just see it. If they go the right route, it would be Sting and Darby against the Hardy boys, and I would like to see that. Even though it's two faces, I still would like to see it because Darby Allin has always been that ride the fence on being a face or not. He's a face, but he still likes to toe the line a little bit at times. So I would like to see that. That wouldn't bother me. Those two teams went at each other eventually. And they just, you know, and a lot of guys don't like the Bucks, but they've just, like, buried those guys on that freaking program. There's just too many wrestlers now. They're running the same issue that, like you said, JC, a couple weeks back, they're running the same issue that Vince had. Too many wrestlers, not enough time.
Yeah, no doubt. And, you know, I can't remember the last time the Bucks wrestled on TV.
Yeah, it's been a while, too long.
I think you're right. Where do they fit in? I mean, are they good? Are they bad? And I wonder if Jericho's new thing, we're using the term sports entertainer. You know, I wonder if that's obviously one to dig at the WWE, but also a way to get mainstream. You know, they've been kind of stuck around 900,000 to 1.1 million viewers for a while now. And they haven't been able to broaden the base. So I wonder if that's kind of a way to kind of reach out and kind of get more mainstream fans to watch the product.
Yeah, they haven't been able to hit on TNT or CBS, or they just haven't – TBS, I should say. They just haven't been able to, like, reach out the way WWE has. They've, like, become mainstream and just have gotten out there where the more just keeps on rolling along. And, you know – the Friday night has had bumps in the road. They seem to have straightened that out and gotten that on the right path. And they may have to face the reality like Vince did and let these guys go to independence and see if Ring of Honor starts and they funnel, like you said, funnel a lot of these guys to Ring of Honor. That way there's less guys on the AEW and the Ring of Honor goes to its own way and just gets its niche in the corner somewhere and then you can just concentrate on the guys you've got that are going to be on the main roster, per se, even though Ring of Honor is a main roster. But there's too many things Khan's going to do, the little things to make it better to get. He's run into that wall, and he's going to figure out a way to get past that wall, like you said, to get past the 900,000 million viewers. They've got to somehow figure out a way to get more fans involved, and that's up to him to figure out and might be more pay-per-views, but if you're going to have pay-per-views, you can't be charging $50 a pop, neither.
Okay, gentlemen, we got to cut it here. We're really short on time, but I thank you for your time today, as always, Joe and John. Good stuff. It's a pleasure pleasure talking to you both, and thanks again for being on the Going Old School show. It's a lot of fun.
Thank you, Chips. Thanks, Joe. And, hey, by the way, Celtics responded, up by 16.
Nice.
Thank you,
there we go. All right, Celtics, go. Go Friars this weekend as well, guys. So we'll talk to you next week, Joe, John, and thank you very much. To each and every one of you out there, thanks to Lou from New Jersey, our resident caller, and thank you very much to Jerry Palm of CBSSports.com for breaking down brackets and talking NCAA with us. Until next week, everybody out there, take care, stay well, be safe, do the right thing, and be courteous of others.
This has been the Going Old School Show. Chip, Stroll, and Joe on blogtalkradio.com. End episode.